This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Brian Fernandez. You're listening to Ringgit and Sense, a show that's all about personal finance. Today, our guest is Robert Fu, Managing Director of MyFP Services, Sundriyam Bharat. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Robert.
Glad to join you guys.
You're a regular. I think we have a desk masked out for you. We should have. Now, today, we're going to be looking at the question of retrenchment as well as housing. So if you have any questions on personal finance, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. That's 018-789-8899. It could be a question for Robert. It could also be a comment. We're welcome to all those things. We're welcoming all those kinds of feedback from you. Now, let's just quick look at the landscape when it comes to retrenchment. That's one of the first questions I'm going to take up. In 2016, almost 40,000 Malaysian employees were retrenched, according to data from the Labour Department. And of this year, some 17,700 workers were retrenched. And of course, this could be underreported because a lot of the smaller businesses and SMEs don't have to report numbers to the Labour Department. Okay, that's the state of play. We actually have a question from Mr. Fakhrul.
My name is Fakhrul. I'm 35 and I've been working for my company for almost 7 years now. There are rumors that my company is going under and I'm worried about losing my job. In this economic climate, I don't know how quickly I can get another job. Do you have any advice on what I can do to prepare for this situation?
So, Robert, this is a question for you. What can you do if it's an impending? You've not lost your job yet. It's just something you expect to happen.
I think the fear for many people, including many of my clients, not many, well, some of my clients, is that you don't understand, you cannot appreciate what the options available to you. Okay, sometimes thinking about your whole situation yourself, you may not be able to understand some of the other options that perhaps are available to you. So to me, I think for people like that, and I've actually spoken to a number of clients like that, is actually to talk to a proper financial advisor who's unbiased and who actually looks at your whole situation to determine what kind of options you have in terms of job, in terms of your spending, in terms of what you need to do in your life, in your family. So that's important.
Robert, one of the key things I think that as individuals we need to do in terms of financial planning and prudence is really to have a 6 months buffer against something like that. If something like this happens in terms of a retrenchment, loss of job or inability to work, are there any other rules besides that from a financial standpoint?
I think when you talk about financial planning, it's a very comprehensive situation. So we do recommend that you do have a certain amount of emergency cash where you can actually, you know, allay this kind of situation where you suddenly are retrenched and then you need about 3 to 6 months to actually look for another job or maybe to reskill yourself or, you know, kind of thing. So we do say things like that. But it is actually more than just a simple one-off kind of you know, solution for you. You need to look at all the comprehensive options because your spouse may have different ideas. Your children may be different positions. So
So maybe we could look at some specific courses of action. For instance, I'm looking at maybe a long-term scenario, maybe 6 months. I know my company's going to close down. I have 6 months. I don't think I'm going to be able to get a job. Should I look to, say, offload my property? Should I get rid of the one asset I have that it can bring me some cash and then maybe downsize and, you know, rent something? Would you advise for or against selling off your property?
Yeah, I mean, if you have to, you have to. Because, you know, if you don't have any other options, and these are the only options you have is to offload your assets or things like that, then you got to find a wise way to do it. How do you do it? You may have 3 properties, you know, or you may have 3 cars or 2 cars or whatever. So this is actually a comprehensive financial planning discussion that we should have with a client. That's why in financial planning, it's not just a one-off solution. You got to look at how things actually affect each other. Right, and at the end of the day, make sure you have that kind of liquidity to tie you through the 6 months, or whatever, and then determine what you need to do to reach your goals after that.
Robert, one of the things is also the scenarios would depend really on the state, as you said, of how well financially you've planned yourself. Now, property on one hand is a very illiquid asset, yeah. So essentially, even if I wanted to get rid of it, it's going to take me time. Probably something like equities or selling some of my unit trust, or perhaps even selling one or two, if I've got more than one car, selling my cars is going to be probably a faster, quicker way to get money into the to tide me over during this period.
Exactly. I think that's why. I mean, for instance, even if you talk about properties, now I've come across clients who actually had properties and then they had this kind of situation. And then, you know, two or three of the properties are not rented. Why? Because he's asking for higher rent. I said, look, you got no choice. Instead of asking for 5,000, perhaps you're going to rent it out for 3,000, you know, to tie you over this period. So those are the kind of things. Yes, definitely, you have to look at the kind of assets that you can dispose of easier. There's more liquid.
You know, Brian, on this question, right, I mean, it seems like people are always going to be saying to themselves, well, in a situation like this, I'm not going to get the best price for my house. I'm not going to get the best price for my car. The pressure of not getting the best price would make you hesitant, right? I mean, you don't want to be in a situation where you're selling it for cheaper.
But you also, for example, you don't want to be caught in a situation where your cash flow is negative and your cash outflow is out every month. You get to a situation where you get more and more desperate the longer you are unemployed. So I think from a planning perspective, Robert, I think you may agree with me, it's probably to take action as quickly as possible.
That is why when I give my talks, I say this is why people may not realize that planning is so important. Because planning is actually trying to make some assumptions as to where you're going through. And when you are actually put into a predicament where you say, okay, possibly you're going to be retrenched in 2 months kind of thing, that's going to put a lot of pressure on you. But if you have actually done a plan earlier on and you know that things like this can happen, and you're in that industry, you probably know that, I may be retrenched kind of thing, but if you have a plan, it's better.
Robert, how many, you have vast years of experience, how many percent would you think of people actually have planned their finances and are ready for a scenario like retrenchment? I mean, give just a ballpark figure. What do you think?
Ballpark, well, very good to give a ballpark. But I can say that most people have some sort of a plan, but unfortunately, it's not very comprehensive and systematic, you know. And typically, some people will actually be a 1st of January kind of planner, you know. So some people plan, but then they don't have a comprehensive plan to determine all the options and how it works together. That's the problem. So some people would plan and say, I should invest my money and just put in FDs. That's not planning. That's just making a simple decision. Planning involves actually determining what's your long-term goals, what's your short-term goals, what your goals are and your family's goals are in the first place, and then deciding what options you need to take.
A fascinating discussion, because we'll be back with a discussion of housing shortly. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Brian Fernandez, and our guest this morning, Robert Fu, Managing Director, MyFP Services, Sanjay Bahad. The questions before us are retrenchment as well as housing. Do we have any, just a kind of rule of thumb, Brian brought up the question of having that buffer. You know, you kind of go in, some people say 3 months, you suggest 6 months, that's very interesting. Are there any other, quick shorthands, rules of thumb that you would sort of put out there for people who are facing retrenchment? You know, when do you start selling assets? Should you just hold on to your assets for a good amount of time before you start thinking about assets and such?
Like I said, it depends on the person and the family, you know, because different families face different situations. So some of them will not have a choice but actually to sell, you know, some of the so-called prized assets if they have to, you know. And sometimes if you say, you talk about selling assets or having emergency cash, these are all combinations. Even though you have a 6 months emergency cash, when you get retrenched from a very high-paying job, that may not even be enough. Correct.
So what would you tell people to avoid doing or avoid thinking? Well, you know, because often people panic, that seems to be a natural reaction, or they blame others. What would you say you avoid doing?
The first rule in financial planning, when we actually look at a person's situation, is actually the liquidity. The first thing is liquidity. Are you actually reasonably liquid in terms of actually dealing with the life situations and things like that? That's number one. Okay. Number two is that, are you covered? That means to say, are you insured? Not over-insured, not under-insured, but are you reasonably insured? That is the second thing you look at, right? And the third thing is your wealth being placed in places where it's growing healthily in an optimum way, rather than sitting in FDs or all that kind of thing, or in scams, which may going to affect you later. So these are things that you have to look at, yeah.
Robert, are there some sort of insurance policies or stuff that basically can insure us in the event of us losing our jobs?
Yeah, I mean, insurance is a very interesting area. You can have actually insurance on many areas to cover because your loss of jobs and things like that. You can have that, yeah.
Because that would be a way then for some people who perhaps can see that 6 months down the road or 12 months down the road, they're going to be unemployed because...
So you buy an insurance policy.
Exactly, proactively. That's real planning.
No, I think... in anything that you do, where you actually, diversify your risk, basically you buy insurance policy, you know, there's a cost. Obviously, there's a cost. I mean, what if you don't get retrenched? You know? And you got to count the cost and see whether this is actually something that you're worth going into. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the question of housing, because we had Bangnagar coming up, and it's weighed in on very forcefully with a lot of data on the question of affordability and outlining for us, you know, exactly what, in some sense, is a kind of a feel on the ground about the lack of affordability of a house. And we actually have a question here from Aisha about buying a first property.
Hi, my name is Aisha, and my question is about buying my first property. So in today's economy, I'm just not sure if I should be looking to buy to invest or if I should be buying it to stay in.
Okay, so that's Aisha's question, and we also have a question here on the housing issue from WhatsApp. It says, is it a good time to buy property this year?
You're asking me to predict.
Well, in terms of your sense, I mean, in the sense that if you can't predict it to the extent that you can predict, when is a good time to buy?
I think that question by Aisha, whether I should buy to stay or to invest, I think if you're buying to stay, that's a very personal choice. Okay, then of course you got to look at your affordability, whether you can buy the property that you want to stay in. That's one thing. But if you're talking about buying to invest, then the question is that why do you want to go into property for invest when there are many other options where you can invest? And then do you know what's the return on properties after deducting the cost and the financing cost and all that kind of thing? You know? So property, if you look at it on a longer term, returns on property is definitely not as high as equities. You know. So then the question is that if you say invest in properties, then we say, do you want to invest all of it there, buy one property and lock all your wealth there, or you should actually spread out your investments?
Robert, as a rule of thumb, what would you recommend as a financial planner in terms of the weightage of your various investment portfolio? So properties, equities, cash, risky investments and so forth. What sort of ratios would you be looking at?
Okay, when we work with our clients, the kind of investment return overall, when we talk about all the investments a client go into, different asset classes and all that, we look at the kind of return he needs to be able to achieve his personal goals. Because when you talk about financial planning, you're planning for your life, your one life, up to the end of your life. So what is the kind of return you need based on the resource you have? So individuals and families will have a different structure, right? Because each asset class gives you a kind of return, a certain specific. I mean, if you put in cash, obviously, that is lower. You put in equity, it's higher. You put in property, it's somewhere in between. So you need to construct something that fits the client's rate of return that he needs and the risk that he's willing to take to actually achieve his goals.
You know, one of the things I think that people think about when they say they're going to buy a property for investments, they think, I'm going to rent it out and I'm going to have an income stream from that. Yeah. And I might not even declare it to the tax department.
Right. Right.
You know, is that good thinking? I mean, the idea that, oh, you know, a house that will bring rental and an income stream.
Yeah, that sounds simple. It used to work many years ago. Currently, with the kind of the price of houses that you have to pay for and the kind of rent that you can get, that doesn't seem to work that well anymore.
Because there's there's basically yield compression on the rental side. Am I correct?
Yeah. If you look around, I mean, this is from my basic observation. There are quite a number of mid to high end condos around in the market. They are not fully occupied. They are not even 80% occupied. Many of them are 30%, 40%, 50% occupied. So what does it tell you?
Yeah, in fact, there was a time when I think there was an expectation that there was an expatriate community, a large enough expatriate community, that will be paying high prices for rental. And we know, of course, that we've lost quite a bit of our expatriate community,
yes.
Haven't we?
Yes, definitely.
So really, the point is, especially with this whole issue now of affordable housing, one of the things that the government is looking at, obviously, is for particularly for first home buyers or people who have not owned a property before. What do you recommend as a ratio in terms of your repayments per month? Something that's comfortable, that's not overly stressing your financial budgets.
Well, I think first of all, you got to determine whether owning a property is really what you want. You know, it's the same question nowadays with Uber and Grab and all that. Owning a car, is that what you want? Do you really need to, you know, there was somebody who actually did the workout and all that and said that actually maybe you don't need to own a car. You know, you just, you know, depend on what you use.
Like myself.
Property is the same thing, you know. The question is that do you need to own that property? Do you need it to own because of you want to stay there or is it because of investments?
Yeah, in fact, we have another WhatsApp question and it's about properties, looking at Airbnb and whether this is the new way forward in terms of rentals to monetize, such a property.
Definitely. I mean, Airbnb is actually the Uberization of the whole property industry, if you ask me. Definitely, that's an option you should look at, yeah.
Now, we had a discussion earlier with Kusu Chuang, and he's a serious advocate of rental. He says we really should get over that middle-class Malaysian mentality. You need to buy a property. Would you caution against, making a radical move like saying we don't need to buy, you could just rent for the rest of your life? Because, you know, the common thinking is that it's wasted money. When you rent, it's wasted money. When you buy, it's an asset. You could always somehow unlock that value later on.
Okay. The thing is that people who buy properties, and obviously, other than the fact that you like to own properties and things like that, it's a very probably an Asian thing, kind of thing that you want to have your own home. But I think if you look at it, that kind of thing about buying property and having a property and not letting the price escape you maybe 10 years later, because property prices have been going up for many times. So now when property prices are going up and it's so easy to sell your property on a sub-sale and all that and make money, so people say, I better jump on this bandwagon. But once you come to a situation where the property actually tapers, all right, and then you have a situation where apartments are like 30% occupied, 40% occupied, then you got a lot of options, then the idea of actually renting becomes viable.
Yeah, you could probably, for example, and using your example of high-end properties, the yields are so low, it's so much cheaper. It doesn't even, a lot of them don't even cover their interest costs.
Exactly.
So it's actually so much cheaper for you to rent that nice property than to buy it.
Okay, so we got another question here, and it's slightly left field. But the question is, how would you invest 1 million ringgit? Now, if somebody comes to you and says, I've got 1 million ringgit in cash, what would you suggest they do?
I think the question is, before I tell you what, there are so many things I can tell you to do with the $1 million. The question is, what do you want from it? What sort of return do you want from it? What sort of liquidity do you want from it? What sort of risk do you want to take? Do you want it onshore, offshore? There are a lot of questions I have to ask before,
Can I just paint a scenario of someone that's looking to retire in the next 5 years and they've got a windfall of 1 million ringgit?
Yeah, that's me. Okay, so Robert, I'm 51, going on 52. Right. I've just been handed 1 million ringgit. What would you say to me in terms of...
I will say to you, you need to actually sit down with us and have a financial plan, because I got to determine what is your estimation of the kind of age that you're going to reach up to. I mean, do you think your life...
With my lifestyle, I would put it at 65.
Sure, okay, 65.
Good 10 years. Just give me two good years,
so
Robert.
For 10 good years, then we got to look at your lifestyle and then determine what sort of returns we want from that money. All right, and then they look at your liquidity situation. Remember I was saying liquidity... Right? Mm-hmm. Protection, investment. Yeah.
I think I just, in fact, instead of investing it, I'll put it in a bank and I'll just dole it out every month and have, enjoy holidays for the next 10 years.
Sure. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. And hopefully at the end of the 10 years, I drop dead. Okay.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Okay. Thank you very much. Our guest this morning, Robert Fru, a managing director, MyFB Services, Sundriyam Bahad. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And of course, Brian Fernandez, myself, Sharad Kutum. We're coming up to the news shortly. And after that, we'll have Enterprise. guys, stay tuned. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.